Well, hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Veterans Radio Podcast. Cyrus Raymond here from the Legal Help for Veterans Studio in Northville, Michigan. Just want to thank you for clicking on the download button on today's show. And also would like to thank podbros.com for having this podcast on their website. Head to their page and check out many other great podcasts. Until then, let's take it back to Jim Fossone right here on the Veterans Radio Podcast.
All across America and around the world, this is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Jim Fossone.
And we're back on Veterans Radio. Hope you enjoyed the first half hour where we got to talk to two Air Force pilots, which gives us our setup to talk to a Navy pilot. And Carrie Lorenz, say hello to Veterans Radio.
Hello. Glad to be here. Thanks for having me.
Well, we're thrilled to have you here. With me is Dale Throneberry.
Welcome back, Carrie, to Veterans Radio. Have we talked to you in the past?
Yeah, we have. We talked maybe about a year ago integration of women into ground forces.
There we go. See,
your memory was almost all there.
It was pretty good. I know I've talked to this.
And I kept saying
before.
The book just came out, so you couldn't have talked to her about the book.
No, it was something else. Well, welcome back, Carrie. Thank you very much for agreeing to be on Veterans Radio again.
You bet. I'm happy to be here.
Well, we had a great discussion the first half hour with a major and captain who currently fly for the Air Force. And I think we want to start a little bit the same way with you, Carrie, because it's integrated throughout the book, Fearless Leadership, that we're going to talk about. And that is what motivated you to fly and what motivated you to serve?
Oh, well, it was interesting listening to their stories because I think I actually have a similar story as well. I was always really drawn to flying, similarly to the gals that you had on earlier. My dad was a Marine Corps aviator, and I come from a family that has a long line and a long history of service. So I was always drawn to flying, and in particular, naval aviation. And so it was interesting because when I went into flying, I didn't go into this or into naval aviation thinking about breaking down barriers or smashing through glass ceilings. I was really drawn to an organization that was intensely focused on mission before self. So it was something that I'd always wanted to do. I always wanted to serve my country. I took a little bit different path than they did. I did not go to one of the academies, nor was I in ROTC, but I went to the University of Wisconsin and graduated from there with a bachelor's degree with a double major actually in social work and psychology.
Sounds perfect for a pilot.
I know, it does, right? I went to the Aviation Officer Candidate School in Pensacola, Florida.
Before we get there, I think this is a element that both the captain and the major mentioned, and that is the role of sports and competitiveness in this type of career. And maybe you can talk a little bit about it. Again, it's in your book, Fearless Leadership, but maybe you can talk a little bit about what you brought to the table in terms of your sports experiences.
Right, that's a great point. So I grew up in Wisconsin, so I grew up playing hockey and volleyball and basketball throughout middle school, grade school, and high school. But then once I went to the University of Wisconsin, I was a varsity rower. So anybody who's familiar with that sport at all understands it's extraordinarily physically demanding, but it's also very psychologically demanding as well. And it has a very interesting play between having to be really, really tenacious and gritty and being able to gut your way through very, very painful training sessions and perform at a very individual level, but while you're also working as a great team member and a teammate. So I do think that really extraordinarily competitive level of athletic involvement really had set me up very well to be able to step into an environment where there were a lot of similarities, where you had to be able to work well as an individual, certainly, but you also had to be able to function very well within a team in order to get the job done.
And you graduated from the University of Wisconsin when?
In 1990. So then I went off to Aviation Officer Candidate School in 1991. And what is a little interesting, because this was in the era, as you both probably remember, definitely before the full 24-hour news cycle, where it's any channel all the time. You know, you kind of had the three major channels. CNN was just coming on. And really, for the 2 years that I was buried in flight school, busy studying and flying and doing everything that you have to do in that, we didn't have a whole lot of time to follow the news, but I was aware that there was this conversation happening about women in combat and whether or not the country was ready for female aviators and certainly not female fighter pilots, and so that there was a lot of back and forth going on during my time. It was an interesting time to be a part of the military, for sure.
And certainly in your leadership book, it discusses some of those times and the challenges that you faced. How did those challenges sort of shape your view of leadership?
Well, it's interesting. I think right now we have there's such a sense of immediacy in everything that so many people do, that we think that we need to accomplish things right away. We feel like it's a very almost self-centered, kind of myopic view sometimes. When I started flying, I certainly was aware of the fact that women had been flying military aircraft since 1942, right? The WASP. The women service air force pilots ferried tens of thousands of airplanes all over the U.S. and Canada and overseas in the 40s, but they were really limited to those non-combatant roles. So it's the early 90s. There's still this discussion of, can women be successful? What are we going to do about this? Can we handle prisoners of war, everything else? And there was a lot of resistance, a lot of barriers to success. And so one of the things that I really found, and I certainly address in my book, is this idea of, what is it going to take to really step into a role? What about your mindsets and your beliefs, and how do you challenge things that you're afraid of when so many people are telling you, we're not ready for this yet, we don't have your kind here, or why would you ever want to do that? You know, we haven't done this before. One of the things that my dad always used to say to me, and interesting that the women before me both mentioned their dads being really strong role models as well. My dad used to always say to me that the ones who say you can't and you won't are probably the ones that scared that you will. So just go for it.
Well,
and that's actually... Yeah, that's really sound advice.
And again, I think one of the things we hear over and over in talking to veterans who have had these amazing careers, and part of that is you sort of have to break through what you're afraid of doing and try it. But let me go back to when you were finishing up. You got your wings, got out of pilot school.
Mm-hmm.
What airframe options were available to you? And let's talk a little bit about the F-14 Tomcat that you ended up in.
Okay, well, when I got winged, ironically enough, just a couple of months before that happened, I was on a normal path, just like a regular guy going through flight school. And just a couple of months shy of completing that, which is almost a two-year program, because there were no strike fighters available to women, they hadn't opened up women in combat yet, I was actually pulled aside and told, hey, since they haven't opened up women in combat yet, we're going to give you two options. You can either get out of the Navy and not owe any time, or you can simply go to a non-flying job, which, as you can imagine, as a student naval aviator, is devastating when that's everything you've been working towards, that's what you've been dreaming. And so I asked for a little bit of time and, came back and said, hey, I don't want to get out of the Navy. I don't want to go to a non-flying job. We need to find a third way. And That, of course, is not usually how those conversations go when you're talking to someone who is senior to you. But they went in and they took a look at some of the records and came back and actually offered me a slot to stay on as an instructor pilot. So in the couple of months that I thought I had before I got winged, where I thought I was going to stay on as an instructor pilot down at the training command in Kingsville, Texas, I just showed up every day. I worked as though I were going to the fleet, out to a combat aircraft, just like my squadron mates and my classmates. And about a month later, at the very end of April in 1993, is when the policy ban was finally lifted by the then Secretary of Defense, Les Aspirin. And what happened was they lifted the exclusion clause or the ban on women in combat aircraft. So what ended up happening was then I was able to literally that day fill out my dream sheet and put down what I wanted to fly and which coast and all that. So I ended up just about 2 months later getting winged, earning my wings of gold, and I was assigned the F-14 Tomcat, and I got to go out to Miramar, California and fly that. So it was a pretty amazing experience. The Tomcat was, unfortunately, it's since been retired, but it was definitely a premier fighter at the time, and if you've seen Top Gun, then you've seen the airplane.
Oh, hasn't everybody.
I know. No, you know what? Actually, no. You would be surprised how many people who are younger than us have not seen that movie yet. And well, I always try to tell people, I say, hey, you know, it's on a continuous loop, usually on TNT on Saturdays.
Yeah, you can always find it somewhere. So let me ask you, was the F-14 assignment a coveted assignment at the time that you were getting your wings?
Absolutely. The F-14 and the F-18 both. The F-14 was one of the most difficult airplanes to land on the aircraft carrier. So it was normally the people that got assigned to fly the F-14 would be the ones who had very, very good boat landing grades in the training command because it was such a beast to get aboard. Not to get too technical because, you know, I'm sure the gals before me and you all as rocket scientists and such. It comes aboard the ship on a really, really delicate or sensitive part of the power band. So you don't have, you're in a bad position every time you come aboard. You just don't have, you can go into full afterburner. And if you get a little low, get a little slow, it can get dangerous and get sketchy really, really quickly. So it was a pretty sporty airplane, needless to say, to fly on and off the aircraft carrier, but fun.
And you served until, I believe, 1999?
Correct. Right. Yeah. I got out in 99. And since then, you know, I have kids. I've got four kids. So I had my first two, when I was in the service, had my second daughter just as I was getting out and just kind of made that transition of essentially going from Mach 2 to preschool to now I do, I know.
From Mach 2 to the terrible twos.
Okay. Which is faster.
Well, let
That's
me.
Right. I should have had a step in there, shouldn't I?
Yeah, we're going to move into talking about what you're doing in the leadership category and your new book that's out. Talking with Carrie Lorenz. I'm Jim Fosso, and I'm with Dale Thronberry.
Hello, I'm still here. I'm fascinated by these stories. I'm always amazed at these jet pilots that fly at 800 miles an hour or whatever it is, and, you know, I could go 120 miles an hour, but I could go backwards.
That's the difference. That's the difference. So, Carrie, you got out in 99. You're raising your children. What moved you into the consulting and motivational speaking and now the writing arena?
Well, it's been interesting, as we were just kind of joking about, going from that big transition from Mach 2 to the terrible twos to preschool, and then now where I am today. It's been pretty fascinating and an interesting path that in the years that I've left the Navy, since I've left the Navy, and I've been working as a leadership consultant, and I do a bit of strategic planning and a lot of keynote speaking. One of the things that I was really struck by and what really inspired me or motivated to write this book are really the parallels between the world of naval aviation and the world of business and working with really high-achieving, high-performing business people, and that in both of those situations, whether it's working in the world of naval aviation or in high performance business, that leaders are having to perform in really highly complex and very high pressure environments where everything is constantly changing and you clearly don't have perfect information. And now that I have the benefit of a few more years under my belt, being able to pull a lot of these different things together and understanding what those parallels were, for me, it became really clear that no matter what realm you work in or what spectrum, whether it's in the military, whether you work for an association, a heat treating facility, or for a Fortune 10 company, that any high performing team is going to require high performing leaders. So what I tried to do is really pull together these different ideas of what it's going to take on a really individual level and understanding what that mindset is, to, you know, courage and integrity and working with tenacity and persistence, to what does that look like once you move from more individual level to fearless leadership in action. So how do you really get your team aligned? How do you get people to understand your mission and work with purpose, and then developing that culture where everybody works really well together, and how do you execute? And then I kind of wrap it all up with the idea of resilience and what happens when things don't go the way that you expected them to go. We're working in such a challenging environment right now that I think all of those skill sets are so necessary, and yet the biggest thing that I always see is that people stop themselves before the environment stops them. And what I mean by that is that, you know, we need to be able to take on board the fact that it's our own personal mindsets and how we approach a situation that will determine whether or not, how we challenge, how we confront our fears, whether or not we're going to be successful. And that, you know what, you just got to summon up the courage, feel the fear, and do it anyway.
Well, I think one of the statements that I underlined on page 257 of your book in the Be Fearless chapter, the conclusion was, quote, most people give up too soon when chasing their dreams. Fearless leadership doesn't develop in an instant. It develops over the course of time, close quote. And I think that's what you're saying is you can't, it's a long process, isn't it?
That's right, it is. And yet, there is no magical pill, there's no magical formula, but there are certain things that you can do and that if you are aware of, that will make you go along that journey faster and be more successful. And oftentimes, though, what people don't understand, and I've got a friend of mine who's a Blue Angel who I actually talked to about this book, that they don't understand the actual work that it's going to take. And I'm sure, you know, you both have heard this as well. I like to say sometimes, if I had a nickel for every time somebody said to me, you're so lucky that, and then insert whatever, you know, you're so lucky you got to fire, you're so lucky you wrote a book, or you're so lucky. And all I can think of is, you know, no, it's a matter of duct taping your butt to the chair and doing the work. But that's not fun.
No, that's not the part they show on Top Gun at all. One of the things I found interesting in your book was that you identified, and it's a great read, folks, and we're going to tell you how to get it in a moment, but in your Fundamentals of Fearless Leadership, you identified as courage, tenacity, and integrity. And, mm-hmm. and I don't think, I've read a lot of management books over the years, I don't ever think I've seen somebody lay it out as courage, tenacity, and integrity. And maybe you can comment where that comes from and why you see those as the first three most important elements.
Well, thank you, I think. And I think you're right. I don't know that anybody else has. Well, I kind of look at those three things as being you need to have the courage to get started, to break through those fears, and no matter how much you're afraid, how uncomfortable you may be, get comfortable being uncomfortable. And the courage is what is going to get you going, but the tenacity is what is going to start getting you across that finish line. And the fact that most people, again, it goes back to this idea that people don't oftentimes understand when they say they want something or they really wish they could only, you know, dot, 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 is how gritty, how persistent, how tenacious you need to be. And in that is this idea of commitment. And it's that combination of desire and discipline and that vulnerability that's really inherent in admitting that you want something and the belief that it's worth working towards. And that's what we need to have, that commitment, that tenacity. You know, I think I said in there, courage is the 20-second sprint. Tenacity is the 5-hour marathon, ironically enough, since they're running the New York Marathon today. But I think that that's what you'll find with a lot of veterans, and whether it's paratroopers, snipers, SEALs, special ops forces, aviators, whoever that may be, guys and gals who are going out there day after day, day in and day out, the tenacity, the ability to stick with it when things are hard, long after the glamorous part is done. And when you start wrapping all of that up and you throw some solid amounts of integrity in there, making the hard calls, doing what is right, then you have a really good foundation to start building your team. And I think we don't talk about that enough. We don't talk about the courage and the tenacity part. We just go right into, I just need to start executing. I don't have time for the rest of this. I don't have time for learning or for practicing. I just want to go out and do. But that doesn't usually end up very successfully.
And I do think some of that, those three values are, inbred into us in our military training. And I suspect it's military families who talk about things like tenacity and integrity. I don't know that there's a lot of that discussion around the table unless you have had some of that upbringing. So, I think your framing of the fundamentals of fearless leadership is very interesting, and I certainly really enjoyed the read. But let's talk about the book just came out, I believe, right?
It did. It came out second week of October.
So this is, are you making a lot of book tour stops at this point? Are you getting the word out?
I'm not doing a lot of book tour stops yet. No, I'm not. But I am doing quite a bit of speaking, and it made the Wall Street Journal bestseller list already. So that's fantastic. It's being very, very well received, and it's getting out there. So I'm excited about it.
The publisher is Greenleaf Book Group and Press out of Austin, Texas?
Yes.
And where can we find a copy of Fearless Leadership High Performance Lessons from the Flight Deck?
You can either get it from Amazon. It's in some Barnes & Nobles, not every single Barnes & Nobles, but they definitely have it online. Or you can order it from 800 CEO Reads or Books A Million. So, and I think it should be out on iBooks. If it's not out this week, it should be out within the next week or so, and on Kindle as well, obviously.
So when you first sat down and you had a blank page and somebody had talked you into writing a book and you had to start with the first blank screen, now what do I do now? How frightening was that to fill up, get your thoughts down and turn it into a real book that's now available in all those places?
Okay, transparently enough, it was terrying. I'm kind of old school too. The blank page on a computer screen to me, it's the most creative sucking mechanism that there is. So I actually did probably a third of my book, probably a third of it typing into my laptop or desktop, probably a third of it just longhand on legal notebooks with. You know, I had 11, 12 legal pads all stacked up where when I was traveling, I would write longhand. And I actually did some dictation software when I couldn't figure out certain stories that I wanted to tell because I didn't use a ghostwriter. I wanted it to be as though if after you heard this interview, you went out and picked up the book, you started reading it, and you're like, oh, my gosh, it feels like she's sitting right across the table from me. So it's intimidating. I know some of my audience definitely very, very well read, very articulate, and it is not what I call a naval war college tome where it has 9-syllable words, where some fancy schmancy vocabulary in it. I just wanted it to be really interesting and relatable and hopefully really helpful. It was intimidating.
I think you achieved all your goals in this book. As I said, it's a great read. The quotes you have from other folks are put into the right spot. The amount of military experiences in there, I think, were really helpful. Gary, if people want to know more about you or get in touch with you relative to some of the keynote speaking you do and leadership training you do, do you have a website that they can go find you at?
I do. It is carrielorenz.com. So that's just CareyLorenz.com. And I'm on Twitter and Facebook, LinkedIn. I'm pretty easy to find.
And if you Google her, you'll find all kinds of stories. We didn't have time maybe to get into some of the more controversial things, but we didn't want to either. So there. Right, Dale?
That's right. That's our choice. We are the hosts. It's our program. We can do what we want.
So we're really thrilled with having you on. I do want to we hear this all the time, and as we sneak up on Veterans Day, let me get this out of the dedication from the book, Fearless Leadership. Quote, a veteran is someone who at one point in his or her life wrote a blank check payable to the United States of America for an amount of up to and including my life, close quote. I think it's great you put that in there, Carrie, in your dedication, along with the dedication to the kids. We wish you the best in the book, and thank you for being a guest on Veterans Radio.
Thank you, and thanks for having me.
And with that, to all of our friends, you are dismissed.
If you have a VA claim denied by the Board of Veterans Appeals, contact Legal Help for Veterans at 1-800-693-4800. They're experts in handling cases before the U.S. Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. Their number again, 1-800-693-4800.